Morning, everybody. I looked at the Sunday school lesson back, I guess it was Saturday I looked at it for the first time. But I've been thinking about a topic, and I had several different ideas going through my mind for the past little while. And I was listening to, I think it was a sermon or something, a couple weeks back, or maybe just a short video. And the one guy said something about this book, Long Walk Home. I don't know if you heard of Matt Carter. He's a pastor. He started a church in 2002 and grew it to what I guess we'd call a mega church. But then he quit there. And he's now a pastor, one of the pastors at Church of 1122 in Florida. And they have like 30-something outposts or something. A bunch of different prisons and whatnot. But got me thinking about the book. He made a comment about it, and I was like, I'm going to find it. This book, you can't buy it most places, but I went on Amazon, and it's from a thrift store. It's the only place I could find the book that wasn't an audiobook. So I bought it, and I read through it most of it this week. But it is on the prodigal son. And this morning I'm going to be talking about the prodigal son. And I feel it fits well with the rest of the service. I wasn't sure how the Sunday school lesson would tie into it, but that was tying into it good. And he talked about Mary Clay this morning, and that tied into it too. So everything's kind of fallen into place up to this point. So you turn to Luke 15. And we'll start at verse 11. So picture with me, you got a boy, not sure how old he was, but you have a boy that's, for his whole childhood growing up, he's spent that on the farm with his dad. And off in the distance horizon, at night, you can see lights, faint lights of the city. And there's always this, what's out there? What's out there feeling? And maybe there's travelers come by and they make these grand statements about what's out there. And so the boy's thinking about, like, what is actually out there? Maybe this would be a good life for me to go out there. And then we get to verse 11. And if you, when you read the parable of it, it kind of jumps into the middle of it, the middle of the story almost. And he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck, and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it. And let us eat and be merry, for this my son was dead, and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. So we look at this chapter, and I know growing up, I'd look at this chapter and I was thinking, like, how would that actually work if you walked up to your dad and said, hey, I want my money, and I'm heading out. I don't know how well that would work. But when we look at this chapter and we take it to a spiritual side, not the physical side, how many times do we do that to God? We're like, hey, I want my inheritance. I want to know that I got this whatever. But see, I'm going to do this. I'm going to read a section out of here, and then we'll go on. I want to end this chapter by speaking to two groups of people. The first group of people I want to speak to are the ones who are still at home with the Father, but are seriously considering taking a trip to the faraway land. Maybe you're wondering deep down inside in places you don't like to talk about if you are missing out on the best life has to offer because of your call to follow Christ. I can tell you from firsthand experience, those whispering questions are a lie from the pit of hell. They're whispers of an enemy whose oldest trick is to get you to doubt the promises of your Heavenly Father, and he's whispering them for one reason, to kill, to steal, and to destroy. So you have a choice. You can believe the words of God, or you can take the trip. But remember, at best, you'll be basically greatly wasting your time. At worst, you'll be making the greatest mistake of your life. Please remember that if you are his child, he'll let you take the trip. But a day will come when, like the prodigal son and me, you will come to your senses and come back home. But unfortunately, you'll come home with pig stink on your clothes. It's simply not worth it. Jesus is asking you today, are you going to leave me too? I pray your answer is, where am I going to go? You alone have the words of life. That was what Peter said whenever the crowd of people that was following Jesus was just following him because of the miracles. And he turned around and rebuked them, basically, and they all left. He looks at his disciples and said, are you going to leave me? And Peter's like, I ain't going anywhere. He said, you're the one that has the words of life. Is that our say, or what we say whenever God challenges us with something? So I guess what the direction I want to take from this is, where are we at in our life? Does that far off country, that faraway country full of all the grand, glorious looking things, are we still at home? We're looking at that country and we're like, man, if only I could be doing that. Or maybe we're already on the path and we're headed there. We done left home, we're headed there. Or have we gotten there and we're in the middle of all this fun? Or are we at past that point of fun and we run out of money, we're burnt out? And we're slowly starting to realize, and we're looking away from that, and we're looking back home, and man, if only I could be back there again. Verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered together, took his journey into far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. Here he's made his choice. I'm leaving home. This ain't worth it here. I've spent too much time here. There's better things in life. I'm moving on. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. I'm not sure how much of an inheritance he had or how much he blew per day, but a lot of this chapter, I have a feeling, condenses, 20 years maybe? I'm not sure how far of a journey it was, but if it was a far off country and you had to walk to get there, he was probably pretty bullheaded and determined he was going to get there to take up the time to walk. But when he had spent all, He spent this whole time there. He's wound up having all the party and fun that he could have, trying to fill a hole in his life that he ain't going to be able to fill. And if you ever wonder why it's so hard to fill that hole in your life, you can read Ecclesiastes, which is Song of Solomon, which is Solomon's basically prodigal son's story. If he had the money to do whatever he wanted, so he did whatever he wanted. And he himself said, it's vanity. It's like chasing the wind. You're not going to get anywhere. Ecclesiastes 3:11, this is ESV. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. The reason that we search for something so hard, trying to fill it with void, fill that void, is because we're trying to fill an eternal void with physical things. And until you're willing to let the physical things go and to allow God to fill that eternal void with how he has designed to fill it with himself, you're going to be chasing the wind. And that's what the prodigal son found out. He began to be in want, and he went and joined himself, or as ESV said, he hired himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Now, Jesus is telling this story to the Jews, the Jewish nation around him, and pigs to them, that was the Gentiles thing. Somebody's raising pigs, it was them. They didn't even eat the thing, so why would he raise them? And so if this boy has come to the end of himself so far that him as a Jew is going to go work for somebody and feed swine, like, this boy is scraping the bottom. He's worse than worse. The boy, guessing he had lots of time to think while he was there. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. How often in our life do we run to that far off country? And while we're there, we run out of resources on our own, and so we hire ourselves out to something else to feed swine. We're in the pen, surrounded by all the stuff that failed us, and we're desperately hungry for anything, even if it is an old corn husk that's laying there, because we're trying to fill that void, that hunger that we can't fill. Until finally we come to our senses. And we realize that this isn't what we need, what we're called to be. So a lot of the reasons that we get to that point, we run off to the far off country, and then we get there and we figure out it's not worth it, is because there's two voices in our head. There's the voice of the Father and there's the voice of the enemy. And too often, the voice of the Father, it's, let's give up of yourself, follow me. But our flesh is like, uh-uh, I don't want to do that. It sounds too hard. And enemy, he whispers all these, oh, I'll give you this, I'll give you that. One guy, he said he likes to think of the devil as a bass fisherman. He got three lures. the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. He hooks on the lust of the flesh. He's out there. You don't bite on that one, so he sticks on the next one. Won't bite on that, sticks on the next one. Ooh, that looks good. He got you. But it's a flashy lure. It looks nice and appealing. But as soon as you bite it, you figure out underneath all those nice fluffy looking feathers are the hook. And that's the point that he got to. He's in the pig pen, he's feeding the swine, and he realized that underneath that nice flashy looking lure, there was a hook. And he's stuck. He finally comes to his senses. How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to eat and to spare, and I perish with hunger? How long does it take for us to get to that point that we've realized that on our own, the things that we're chasing after, when we finally get to the point that, man, I can't fill this void? And then we start to think back over the times that we had plenty. God fulfilled our needs. And we realize that, well, this wasn't the best decision. Let's go home. I like how he said it in here. Please remember that if you're his child, he'll let you take the trip. But a day will always come when, like the prodigal son and me, you will come to your senses and come back home. As a father, you can only do so much for your children. And God can save us. And he has the desire that we follow him continuously. But he also gives us a free choice. So if that far-off country looks appealing to you, and you're stubborn, you're going to go there. He's not going to hold you back. But he's not going to let you just stay there either. He'll put things in your path that will make you question why you're actually there. And once you do know Christ, sin looks appealing. But as soon as you do it, there's this sense of dread and guilt and shame that wasn't there before, because you've known the other side. And when you know the peace of that comes with following Christ, when you go against that, it's something that good and evil can't dwell in the same place. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's just the awful feeling of, I've let God down again. Philippians 1:6, for I am confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus. God began a good work in you. Yes, you may have strayed, but he ain't done with that work yet, and so he's going to keep drawing you to finish that work, because if he started it, he's going to finish it. Verse 18, I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. He should have stopped with the end of verse 18. He should have stopped with, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. But you go to verse 19, and that sounds just like us whenever we ask God for forgiveness. I'm sorry, God. I messed up again. I did this. But here's my solution to the problem. How about we try this? That's kind of where he was at. He's like, Dad, I'm sorry. He said, I shouldn't have done that. It wasn't right. But here's the solution I thought of while I was out there that'll probably help this situation out better. You made the decision to go out there. You think your solution to your problem is going to be the best idea? Verse 20, and he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. So say this is about 20 years' time, and dad's been around the farm. He's been continuously farming. He might be a little old, stooped, gray-haired now. But every day for 20 years, he comes out of the house. He stands on the porch. He looks out on the horizon. Nobody there. He's done that for every day for the past 20 years. And one day he looks out there and there's just a speck out there on the horizon. It doesn't really sound like he said, and he waited to make sure it was his son. No, it says he up his robe and he didn't care what people thought of him. He's gone. Same way with God. You wander off. You've turned your back on God. You've gone to the far off country. For the past how long? He's there. He's looking. He's standing on the porch every morning. He's looking for you. Waiting. And when you come to the end of yourself, he hikes up his robe and he comes running to you. He doesn't wait for you to get there. You turn your heart toward God, he comes toward you. Verse 21, the son said unto him, Father, I sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. He didn't even have a chance to get his excuse out of why, how we can fix this situation. Dad's like, tells the servants, bring forth the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet. For this month, and bring forth the hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead, and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they begin to be merry. Boy didn't even have a chance to have excuses. He starts talking, and dad basically like, he's back. Let's go party. How often when we come back after our journey to the far-off country, do we come with all our excuses? And we try giving our excuses to God, but God accepts us back before we have a chance for our excuses. Let's look at the last part of this chapter. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. Yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. So at the beginning of this parable, my Bible doesn't, but some other ones they say, the parable of the prodigal son. I think right at verse 25, they should put a line in there that says the self-righteous brother. So we look at the older brother, How many of us can compare and relate to the younger brother? Prodigal. We spend lavishly on whatever. Waste our life. But then how often can we be like the older brother? Younger brother comes back home from partying, living it up. Dad goes and helps celebrate him because he's back. And we're like, seriously? We've been here a whole time. And you're not gonna never give me anything to celebrate. Like, do we as a church do that sometimes? Somebody's wandered off. They come back. Do we look at them with a self-righteous attitude? Like, I've been here the whole time. Like, this is... What's so special about that? Out of those two boys, I'd rather be the first one. Because he figured out that he had a problem, and he came back, and he repented. The older brother had a problem, but he didn't see it. Do we live our life self-righteous, comparing ourselves to others, trying to figure out why we don't get all these things because we've done it right our whole life? I mean, I've been in church, I've done this, I've done that. I've heard it said before that the hardest people to save are people that grew up in church because they think they bring something to the equation. Are we like the older brother where we're self-righteous? Or are we like the younger brother where, yes, we have strayed, but we came to our senses, we've come back. And when we come back, does that give us a hatred for the sin where we were and we have no desire to go back? So I guess my thought I want to leave you with, get out a little earlier, thought I want to leave you with is, what's that faraway country look like to you in your life right now? Is there city lights on the horizon that have you questioning, is it really worth where I'm at? Is following Jesus really worth what people say it is? What does that look like to you? And if you're considering going to that faraway country, whatever it may be, consider what that means before you make that choice. What will that road take you to? And when you come to the end of yourself and you're in that pig pen and you smell like them, it doesn't take long to smell like a pig when you're in a pig pen. You try catching one and you stink like them the rest of the day. When you got that smell on you, how long is it going to take for you to realize that this is not where you're called to be? And there's better back home, even though it might not be comfortable like you want it to be. Growth don't come out of comfort. How long is it going to take for you to realize that the far-off country is not where you need to be, not where you want to be, no matter how bad you want to think you want that? And if you're considering that, or maybe you are there and you're wondering how to come back or thinking about it, I'm not saying that you come back, it'll be the last time you'd have the desire to go to another far-off country. It's human tendency to chase the wind, so to speak. But are you going to allow God to direct your path? And when that far-off country looks tempting, you're going to check with him to see if that actually is a legit thing to follow after, or is it the enemy and his scheme behind that lure is to kill, steal, and destroy? I guess my feeling behind this is I've been to that far off country. It ain't worth it. And I know as a youth, there's a lot of far off countries to look at. Consider it greatly before you take that step, because it's not worth it. If that far off country looks very, very appealing, 15 years from now when you look back, what's the regrets going to look like? Because hindsight's 20/20. If you could go back and change things, you would, and you'd have done it different. So before you go and make the choice to take the inheritance money and consider your Heavenly Father is dead while He is still there, very present with you, consider the consequences of what that will be 15 years from now and what you're going to have to live with for the choices you made now on a whim. And I pray that if you're in that far off country, that you would allow God to change your heart and be willing to make the hard choices to come back. Because home is a whole lot better place than living in some stranger's pig pen.